Good morning. My name is Everett Page. I've been involved with DBSA since its beginning.
Good.
Okay?
Yep.
Let's start with the beginning of DBSA or MDDA Boston. It started by Dr. Jonathan Cole, who was a psychiatrist at McLean Hospital. He had been to a conference in Chicago and had heard about self-help support groups. He was a daring person and came back with the idea of starting such a group at McLean Hospital. As he approached the administration, they were told that there was no place for such a meeting to be held at McLean. However, Dr. Cole insisted, and he found five people who were his patients to meet in his waiting room, the first meeting room, asking people to come. It was on the second floor of the administration building, and I was asked to go. This was in October of 1983. I refused to go. I didn't like groups. I didn't believe groups could be helpful to people, and therefore I did not go to that first meeting. It took my psychiatrist about 5 months to convince me to go, and I went in February of 84. We met on the second floor of the administration building, and there were about 10 people in attendance. I went to the first meeting believing that I would not ever go back because I didn't like groups. But I found that this group of people cared for each other, listened to each other without being judgmental, and were concerned. We continued to meet there for several months, and finally decided that we wanted to have a group meeting regularly. We contacted Harvard University through Dr. Cole, and a meeting was held at the Berkeley House at Harvard during the summer months. We thought that there might be 25 or 30 people. Over 100 people attended that first meeting at Harvard. We set up the organization with the help of an attorney, which Dr. Cole obtained services for us for free. And he also got a request. He requested $300 from the Boston Society for a new group. This was an astounding thing for people, and people were very excited about it. The office was located in Bob Berman's car. Bob Berman was one of Dr. Cole's patients and became kind of the chairman of the group, and at the first election, he was elected president. This was kind of an appointment as president, not as an election at that time. We then organized into an organized group and had a board of directors with Carol Goldman, who was our first secretary or clerk. She insisted that we have elections, and she organized the first election via mail. And the people who had been coming and who had paid their dues, Bob Berman insisted that people pay their dues of $10 per year. If you didn't pay your dues, he said you couldn't come to the meetings. He was pretty bossy, I guess we would say, although he was a great guy. He also thought that we should have a brochure. And on the brochure was going to be listed those people who were on the board of directors and who were officers of MDDA Boston. He also insisted that we have on that brochure the academic achievements of all of those officers. And we put it on the first brochure and decided that we would scare people away if they saw the amount of education that the people who had depression or manic depression running an organization had. So we took off our credentials, our academic credentials, and just used names. Our group grew from 12 to over 50, and we felt that we needed to have a different meeting place than in the administration building. And so McLean gave us a room in the Higginson, in the cellar of Higginson, the lowest level of Higginson, and we had our meetings there each week. As we grew, we needed more than one room, and we took on a second room, and we also branched out under the direction of Toby Johnson, a Family and Friends member. We had the first group for Family and Friends at that time. The group continued to grow, and the meeting spaces got even smaller, and we found out that there were rooms that were used as classrooms in Higginson on that lower level by nurses, and no one used them at night, so we just took over those rooms without getting very much of permission. Also, we asked the hospital for the possibility of having an office, and the hospital gave us a basement office in South Belknap. This was a big closet. It held two chairs, a desk, a file cabinet, and it had a telephone. But then problems arose. How do you get into the office? Well, of course, you needed a key. Well, the hospital had a rule that ex-patients could not have keys, and we were all ex-patients of the hospital, and so we could not have keys, but we had the office. So finally, under the help of Evie Barkin, we got a key to the office, which was the first great achievement that we had with the hospital. We also were meeting and deciding that we needed some social activities, and there were two things that were brought up that could be social activities. One, a summer picnic or barbecue, and a winter holiday party. The summer barbecue was vetoed by the hospital because we were going to serve hot dogs and hamburgers, and we needed to have a fire system to cook those items, and we certainly couldn't have fires on hospital grounds. And so our first picnics were held down in the public park in Waverly Square. I can't remember the name of that park, but it's where the children play in the summer, and in the fall we had our first barbecue. We also had a holiday party which we had in our meeting room, and our members got the food together, and slowly we found that we could have some social activities. We began to grow, and we expanded first into an office area in Higginson, a large office area. It had a storeroom and a place for several desks. We got a woman to be our kind of our secretary at the office, and she worked for many quite a long time, and it was an exciting time to be at MDDA. Finally, we thought we needed more office space, and the hospital was discontinuing the rehab building, and we asked for the space that had been the hospital patient library. And this was a two-room suite in that rehab building, and very slowly we began to have relationships with the hospital. We agreed when we took over that building that all of our workers would dress professionally, which kind of meant that dungarees and t-shirts and that type of dress was taboo, and the males kind of wore shirts and ties and jackets, and the females wore dresses. This pleased the hospital because we didn't look like a ragtag operation. We also became involved with the national MDDA, and that's an interesting story. We were called MDDA. The national group was called DMDA, Depression. Let's see, DM. Depression, Manic Depression Association, I think.
Yeah.
And is that right?
Yeah.
And we began to take the opportunity to meet with other groups in the country. There was a group in Chicago. There was a group in Houston, Texas, and a group in San Francisco, I think it was. It was someplace in California. And we began to have national meetings. It was in 1991 that we hosted our first national meeting, which we hosted with a group in Providence, Rhode Island, at Brown University. Dr. Cole and other psychiatrists got the use of the university at a really a reduced rate for rooms, and the university invited us there for our meeting. However, when we got there, there was a great discussion of what was going to happen. The university thought that we were a group of professional psychiatrists and psychologists, and when they found out that we were people who had been diagnosed with depression or manic depression or some psychotic problem, they didn't want us there. And they said to us, well, we can't really have you here. We're going to have to get extra security. And we convinced them that we didn't need extra security, and they convinced us that we needed to supply a 24-hour medical room. And so we volunteered to staff a medical room in the hospital with psychiatrists, with people who had depression and manic depression, and we staffed it night and day for the 3 days of the convention. The only people who used the room was a woman who had forgotten to bring her medication, and she came from California and she needed her meds. And Dr. Cole asked her what meds she was taking, found out that he agreed that those meds were certainly within the realm of possibility for people who had depression. And he wrote prescriptions that she could get in Rhode Island. The other people who used the medical room was the staff at Brown University. Also, before that meeting, we had asked the national organization had organized a program for awards, and we put our name in for an award, not expecting to get it, but we put it in, and we got our first national award in 1991, which was a $1,000 check from the national organization, the money being donated by drug companies. We decided not to use it for our own financial needs, but decided to use it to bring information to the community. And so we did two things with it. One, we organized a public speaking program in the Boston area. And the other thing we did was we bought a number of psychiatric books, which we donated to local libraries. So we were not using it for our own needs necessarily, but to educate the public. We finally were having 100 to 150 people on Wednesday nights, and Higginson was no longer big enough for our meetings. We didn't have specialized groups. We didn't have training for our facilitators. People who dared to lead a group was called a group leader, and it would be different people every week. We would have, we didn't have specialized groups. We used to go around the room and count off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you were 1, you went to the 1 group. If you were 2, you went to the 2 group, and so forth. So it was we didn't have any books to know how to run this group or how to organize it. It was trial and error. Sometimes we did well, sometimes we didn't do as well. And we finally decided we needed to have a bigger space. The Demanoff building had been built, and we asked to use the Demanoff cafeteria. The hospital thought that was too much space for us, so they said we could use the upper level of the cafeteria, which is up 3 or 4 steps from the hallway. We used that space, and we used special in rooms along that hallway. But the group got even bigger, so we took over the whole of the cafeteria because we needed the space. We also didn't have our office in the Demanoff building. That was still in the rehab building, so we asked if we could have a space where we could keep a file cabinet for brochures and books and so forth. And the hospital gave us the entryway to the women's bathroom. It was between the outer door and the inner door where we had a locked file cabinet. It was a little strange for men to go into the ladies' room to get out materials, but it worked out one way or another. Finally, we also decided that we needed to have our facilitators trained, and we asked for the hospital to provide us someone who could do some training. And the person that they gave us was a social worker by the name of Betty Walker. Betty was a social worker on South Belknap 2. She had been there when I was an inpatient there, and I wasn't always the easiest person to get along with when I was depressed, and I did not do probably what Betty would prefer that I had done. But she became she said she would become the trainer for our facilitators, and she thought she could do training in about 4 weeks, about 4 Wednesday nights for facilitators. The 4 weeks went to 4 months because she said that our people who were going to facilitate probably knew as much about depression and manic depression as she did, and it was a process, a long educational process for Betty and our groups. Finally, the hospital was going to use the rehab building for other purposes, and they asked us to consider moving our office space to room 120 of the Demanoff building. And room 120 is now what is the Cole Resource office, the back office, which they have. We said that wasn't big enough, and so they said they would build a special room, a 120A, from part of the upper level of the cafeteria. And we even felt that that wasn't space enough, and so they divided room 119 into two groups, into two rooms, and the MDDA office became room 119. Is it 119?
Yeah, 119.
119.
Yeah.
And the 120A, the bigger of the other two rooms would be used by DVSA and the Coles Resource Center. I didn't mention the fact that Ann Whitman and Evie Barkin had a program started of collecting materials for people who had depression and manic depression, educational materials, and we set it up as the Cole Resource Center. It was part of MDDA, it was the director of the Cole Resource Center became a member of the MDDA Board of Directors, and the president of MDDA became a member of the Cole Resource Board of Directors. So there was a combination between the two groups. We were always dealing with conditions at the hospital, concerns that the hospital had and concerns that we had. Evie and I probably spent as much time with the hospital staff as we did with the memberships of our organizations. I did a funny thing one Halloween. I dressed as a hobo and decided to make contacts with hospital administrators as a Halloween coolie. And I went from office to office wishing people well for Halloween, and came across the assistant director of the hospital. I had a mask, I had on strange clothes and so forth, and I knew who he was, and I asked Dr. Zera if he was a director of the hospital, and he said he was, and I said I had some things to talk to him about, and I scared him. He reported me to to security. He didn't know who I was. and asked, didn't we know that this was a psychiatric hospital? So we had some interesting go-arounds with the hospital or with staff. We often had coffee in the morning. There was in the rehab building, there was a coffee shop run by the rehab unit. We would have coffee with our with people who were janitors, with electricians, plumbers, social workers, you name it, and we met with them at various times. I'm not meaning to use a lot of names on purpose, because there are too many who did a great job. There we the groups of family and friends. We started a group for depression and manic depression. There were the national meetings. One of the things that we did was one of our members became a speech writer for President Clinton. Bob Boston, and Bob invited Evie, I, and Dennis Hagler for a luncheon at the White House. We went to Washington. There was a national meeting there, anyways, and we went. And after we found out that they were going to have to investigate us to whether we could go to the White House or not by the FBI and the Secret Service, the night before we questioned whether they were going to let us in. And we went and we got into the inn and met with Bob and had lunch at the White House and then had a tour of the places in the White House that you've never been. And probably have never even seen pictures of. The Secret Service has or had at that time, I imagine they still do, a gift shop in the cellar of the White House. And we went to the gift shop and we ordered souvenirs, which were mailed to us, things like tie clips, vases, playing cards, and other items from the White House. We also had a tour of the executive office building, the Eisenhower building, so-called, and also we received, after our dinner, packages of M&Ms, White House M&Ms, in little white boxes signed by Bill Clinton with the signature on them. I've jokingly told my family that this is their inheritance, that they can put it on eBay someday and sell the boxes of M&Ms. I've never opened them. I hope the M&Ms will last as long as I do, so they'll be able to open them and see them sometime. There are a lot of funny stories about going on at DBSA or MDDA. We had a woman by the name of Alta. Alta became kind of our first chief facilitator, and she ran our facilitating our groups with a high iron hand, and she started them exactly at 7 o'clock, and at 8:10 she had a whistle which she blew for people to take their 10-minute break. And at the end of the 10 minutes, she would blow the whistle again, and every group was supposed to reorganize itself. She ran the groups with an iron hand. We had some serious situations which we had to deal with. One, we had a member who brought her dog. Today we think of dogs as being service animals. In those days they weren't service animals, but people did have dogs. And the hospital had a rule that you could not have dogs except seeing eye dogs in the cafeteria. So she was asked not to bring her dog, and she insisted on bringing the dog, and it ended up with asking her to take her dog out or to leave it at home, and she wanted to call the police for her rights were being stopped. And so she asked me where the telephone was that she could call the Belmont police. So I told her where her phone was, and she came back and said, "I don't have a dime for the phone. Can I have a dime?" So I gave her a dime so she could call the Belmont police on me, and which she did. And two police officers came, and security came from the hospital, and it was explained to her about not having dogs or any animals in the cafeteria. This started probably at 7:15, and it went on till after 8 o'clock. When we called the liaison with the hospital person, and they finally said she could keep the dog there that night, but she would have to come in and make arrangements for the dog to be brought any other time. And after I told her that, she said she wasn't staying. She didn't want to stay in a group that didn't want her dog. But we took the time for an hour and a half to deal with the dog problem. We also had a situation where at one of our Christmas parties, one of our members brought a wonderful one of those cakes that they have at Christmas time, fruitcake. And he also brought a bottle of rum, and he poured the rum over the fruitcake and lit it on fire in the cafeteria. That got put out very quickly, and fortunately we didn't cause a fire or cause people to have to be called. About this time, we were dealing with various concerns, and our one meeting a month with the board of directors couldn't deal with all of the problems and concerns that people had. And so we set up a share care committee. It was the committee of seven. And this committee of seven would take problems in the share care area, problems of starting and stopping and that type of thing. We began making awards to people. We started an art show, money to operate became a concern, where we had not only our membership dues, but we raised money through various events, like the holiday party and so forth. We learned as we went along. Different people had different ideas. Different people had different hopes. We had different concerns. There were concerns about who would handle money. Could people who have depression or manic depression, would they make a good treasurer, or would it be a family and friends member that would make a good treasurer? That was one of the big concerns. Finally became a 501(c). Is that the right number?
Yeah, nonprofit.
A nonprofit organization with the federal government. We got an accountant. We probably had as many problems with treasurers as we had with anything else. Even people who did not have the disease. We had one treasurer who spent winters in Florida, and we had to mail all the checks and all the financial thing weekly to him, and if he liked what we sent him, he'd sign the checks. If he didn't like what we sent him, he wouldn't sign the checks. which was somewhat difficult. We also had a situation where we were buying tickets for the Boston Red Sox, and the organization that was selling the tickets, which was the railroad, what I guess now is the commuter rail, they wanted you to go to Lowell to get on the train to drive, go into Boston to the Red Sox game, and they wanted to prove the train could do this, and many of our members did not live in the Lowell area, so we had a great discussion about how to deal with organizations like that. We also sponsored a night at the Boston Pops. What should the Pops put in their brochures about who was attending what evenings at Pops? And they didn't know if they really wanted to put down people who had depression and manic depression in their brochures. So we had a lot of public relations situations which we had to deal with it from time to time. I think that the greatest thing that about DBSA or MDDA was that different people had different ideas, different strengths. Other people had certain weaknesses, and we found out ways we could use the people who had the strengths and the people who had the had various weaknesses in a positive approach. We did, from time to time, have to have people leave the organization or take a temporary break from the organization because they weren't able to function well with a group of people. We found that there were certain topics that were triggers for people, topics of suicide and types of suicide, and we had to make rules about what you could talk about medications or what you couldn't talk about medications. We had people who wanted to talk about their sexual experiences, and we had to deal with those kinds of concerns. On one occasion, we had a person confess kind of in a group, or say in a group, that he had committed murder.
Oh, God.
And how do you bring that to the attention of the authorities and not deny him his rights as a member of MDDA or DBSA? We had people who had a hard time dealing with authority and the authority of the board and the authority of individuals. But the group grew. So till we were having 100 to 150 people on Wednesday nights. We then also began to have some daytime groups. People who could not come on Wednesday nights wanted to have support groups during the day. And so we organized those organizations for daytime people. The hospital asked us if we could try to do support groups for people in-house, in the hospital. The hospital had to have people trained for hospital rules and regulations who were going to be facilitating groups within the hospital. So that was another whole situation, another whole process. I think that we got through many of those things. We organized a group at Mass General. We organized a group in Nashua, New Hampshire, one in Concord, New Hampshire, one in Worcester, and there were several other groups that kind of fed out of the Boston organization. Barry, maybe you can ask me some questions.
I think this is...
Is that good? Good place to stop?
Yep, that's a good place to stop.
What's that, 15 minutes? 20 minutes?
38 minutes. 30